Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Initiate Orphans Trailer.
Welcome to The Orphans.
It's Baz Gilroy.
Hello.
I am geometrically fabricated and functional reasoning unit, but you can call me Jeffrey.
Do you know what they're going to do to me?
That's what I am to them out there. Just a spill on the floor that needs wiping up, aren't I?
But I will not stay here and witness your stupidity.
You do nothing but pretend. You don't care about me.
Get up. He's going to find us if we don't move.
The Orphans.
The Orphans.
The Orphans.
The Orphans. Facility. Out now.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. It contains content that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. All Nerdy Show podcasts are made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Discover the many ways you can join in at nerdyshow.com. Everybody, welcome to RPG from Scratch Design Episode 43, and Liam and I are here together, and we found somebody crawling out of a hole that led to the center of the earth on their latest expedition.
Yes.
It is Mr. Doug Banks.
I forgot how to do this. It's not like riding a bike.
No, it's decidedly less physical. We don't really have the body of adventurers.
I don't know what you're talking about. I was dancing up a storm last session.
So, Doug, where are you on the game?
You guys have made a lot of progress since I've been here. It all kind of bleeds together into a big cloud in my head.
Yeah. Actually, I did want to talk about that. I kind of almost feel like we need to do a refresher episode just to be like, here's where we're at currently. Or if you want to jump into design episodes and you feel like 43 is a lot to go through.
Yeah. Well, I do feel that we kind of do a mini refresher about each path before we go to the route of improving them. I kind of want to start with some nuts and bolts, not step six stuff first.
All right.
Based on Leyliners, our actual play podcast that if you're not listening to, please search it on your favorite podcast player, Leylinerz. Leyliners.
Especially if you like Thin Lizzy.
So we are level 3 and 4, yeah, in Leyliners. Nobody has opted to increase an ability point by spending momentum. And that's not a bad thing, except for when questioned about the decision that they made, they never even considered it as an option because they didn't think it had the same value.
Yeah.
Would it be too good to make it only cost 20 to permanently increase an attribute, but then you also still level up and you also get the hit points? So you don't get any new abilities, but you can get it sooner, and you're still leveling up so that the damage increases, your HP increases. So if you got 60 extra momentum lying around like everybody did last session, spoilers, you could level up 3 times instead of 2.
The damage increase, the HP, and whatever function of your stat is might be too good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to be... I don't think the opposite thing is going to happen.
You mean the thing that we're worried about?
I think the fact that you would overlook stat increases for path increases. I think if you enacted this change, you wouldn't have the opposite effect where, like, okay, I have step one, step two, I got my daily, pure stat increases. I don't think that would happen. I think you could feasibly do that, and you would make a weird character, but that almost adds to the options.
That's where I am on it. I think, like, it seems too good only because I'm like, well, if I make a character whose ability, the only ability I care about, I get at character creation, and now I'm just pumping this character full of stuff, I actually don't think that character would be absurdly better than anyone else.
Do you think people would be more willing to spend momentum when they don't have to save as much?
You know what's funny? I don't... So, okay, this will bring me up to it. That's a good question. I think The answer is no, because I think people are still freely spending momentum. I don't really see a slowdown in, like, when people want a thing to happen and it is important to them for what they see as the narrative of their character, either in combat or out of it, they're spending it. Like, I don't see people going, I don't know. They're not really hemming and hawing. I see other players at the table saying, you should probably spend momentum on that. And they're like, I don't really know. But it's not because they're being stingy with their momentum. They don't care about it as much as the other players at the table.
Or a fun situation of something has to happen, and so you're introducing momentum. But sometimes you do have to be like, remember, though, this also allows for critical failure. That's the only way that exists in the system. Yeah, be prepared that that is a possibility. Usually the advice is, don't just spend one. Yeah. Spending one momentum feels bad, because you're just like, I'm introducing so much risk for a 20% better chance of really succeeding.
A critical fail on one momentum is pretty much the same as a critical fail on 10 momentum.
If you're in for a penny, if you're in for a pound, I think three is what, like, if we're going in for something big, it's usually we spend them in groups of threes, because if that feels like enough of a push.
Should there be a bigger penalty or smaller penalty then?
I don't think so.
That makes it complicated.
It makes it complicated. Two, the natural focus of using three momentum in bulk like that to push forward a thing makes critical failures rarer to begin with, and it allows you to make them a little more punishing because that's true.
Yeah, and I've been trying to steer away in GMing from the basic thing that is specific to your character. So, like, you just go for a swing, you spend momentum, you fail. Oh, you dropped your weapon, or you fell down, or you hit yourself, whatever. Now I'm trying to transition to making it more story moments, more environmental problems begin.
I accidentally burned down a house. Oh no.
Yeah. You didn't care that much about it, but it did raise the stakes considerably for
everyone. It would have been way worse in almost any other situation.
So for instance, it starts raining, which now makes everything muddy and slippery. Yeah. Like, things like that could be a cool way to use momentum.
In trying to come up with things, like when running Ghostbusters, and I'm trying to think of more story elements, it always felt weird when you'd be like, oh, ghost die, and then an unrelated thing to your action now happens. Mm-hmm. So I guess as long as the players don't mind it's not weird. Like, I like the idea of being like, oh, now it's raining. Like, that's an environmental difference, and that makes it engaging and more interesting and a higher consequence. But if someone's like, oh, I spent momentum, and now I had a critical failure, and now it's something that almost like just a coincidence had nothing to do with what I did. Mm-hmm. Like, my action isn't being what failed. It's that now we're just in a tornado.
Yeah, right. But the way brownie points are pitched to the player is, as a result of your action, an unexpected consequence happens.
True.
Whereas
momentum is a story focus.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of want to pitch it as a... Yeah. As like moment when you say I want this to succeed,
you're saying this is a story moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And your momentum is your character's permanence in the story.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, when you describe it, as your momentum is your momentum in the story. You don't say it's your momentum in the real world in which things are happening. Like, that's not how you pitch it.
Right.
And
you're saying I want the story moment to focus on this for just a brief moment.
Yeah.
And you're thinking you're going to look like a badass, but instead of looking like a badass,
you just fall on your face.
Now,
or the universe decides that you did a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like saying this can't get any worse, and then it rains. Yes. You know. Yeah. Okay.
And I think there's a secondary thing of momentum that I really like, which is the breaking of the fast on the momentum train, which can happen at a table. Where if you're in an encounter, you're not sure where you're at, how tough these guys are, and then something is revealed to be a motherfucker, and one person spends momentum, the chance that by the end of the round, someone else will have done the same thing is actually pretty high.
Yeah.
It kind of gloms onto each other. Either people pick their moments, or the situation describes itself to everyone of like, this guy's really hard to hit.
Yeah.
You gotta do this. Or you have to make this jump now or bad things are going to happen.
It's interesting because I got a question recently. So your characters are getting a resource.
Yeah.
Effectively, momentum is kind of a consumable in RPGs. And classically in RPGs, I don't know about you, but in my friend group, we don't... If you get an ether in Final Fantasy, an ether rank one, the lowest level ether or whatever, you'll still have that ether at the end of the game because you're too afraid of... Uh-huh. Using them. Same is true in Pathfinder, Dungeons and Dragons. You get something that you think you're going to use and you never end up using it because you're like, oh, well, we can succeed without this. Yeah, exactly. Hmm. So we're not going to use it other than like health potions, which you don't think of that way for some reason.
Yeah.
That was presented to me about momentum, and my argument was, well, just increase the difficulty. Make it so they know that this is very difficult, and it matters to them that they succeed.
I also don't feel like they feel like Aethers. If Aethers had a base level 1 in 20 chance of just not being spent when you use them,
mm-hmm.
you'd be a little less afraid to use them. And if you do a really cool thing when you do it, there's a chance that you would either be refunded the amount of momentum that you used for how cool it was, or possibly, because this has happened a couple times, someone has spent one momentum and been rewarded with three.
Because
of a cool moment. Because of that negotiation, momentum doesn't feel like it's something that you spend and throw away. It feels like it's useful in the story. If you use it well, you will be extra rewarded and move faster through. And it's something that you can get for making a joke. Like, you don't have to go through a dungeon, open a thing. You don't have to buy it from a shop.
It's not just XP.
No.
No.
Yeah. What about the players who just maybe aren't that creative, though? They're like, I just really want to hit him. And it's like you have another player, you know, across the table who's just like, I want to do a backflip off his shield, and I'm going to come down on him and stab him like this with Helmet Splitter. And then it's like, spend the momentum. Oh, my God, that's an amazing play.
I feel like momentum is actually the tool that you as a GM can use to motivate the player to...
Sure, to take those risks and try to be creative.
Don't get me wrong. There's people who never in their life will be smart, clever, or funny.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to play.
Yeah. And they do belong at a table.
Yes.
But even if you're not smart, particularly smart, clever, or funny, you can definitely become smarter, clever, and funnier. I think momentum trains you to do that. And in a moment where you do something that's just for you, kind of cool, kind of creative, kind of funny... Every time we've played this game at this table, and this is, you know, it is a closed system.
It's a small end.
When anyone does anything in their own frame of reference funny, everyone at the table will be like...
Momentum?
Yeah. Give it to them.
Yeah.
Let them have this moment because I want to... I want to see their enjoyment. Yeah. And it's also, it's not... Because momentum is not competitive, it is great to see your friends use it. Fall on their face. It is great to see. Not you falling on your face is still good. You don't feel stingy about spending it. If I do something that I feel like is kind of on the line and I don't get any, I also don't feel bad because there's a near infinite amount of chances.
There's
a near infinite amount of chance to be like, now I made a Doctor Strangelove reference. Give me the sweet, sweet juice.
Yeah. It's fun. But that question came from the person listening to Leyliners, and in the current Prison Break, the Thin Lizzy scenario that they're in, they're gaining a lot of momentum off of fights that are pretty below their ability. Fights that are not challenging. And they're not spending a lot in every combat. And I think in that frame of reference, a GM might think, oh, no, they're not spending their momentum. When in reality, like, these are just here as throwaways to give you context for what is easy versus what is hard. Like, the hard stuff is coming much later. Probably not much later.
Stormtroopers exist to make Darth Vader feel like...
It's okay.
Feel oppressive.
If your players want to conserve their momentum for the fights that they are having trouble with, that is them taking this seriously.
Yes.
That's actually not them dismissing the difficulty of your game. If they're getting stingy with their momentum when they really need to spend it, that can be... Like, that's it's a subject...
If you're in the middle of a fight, you might be on the edge of getting enough momentum to level up, and you really want to level up during this fight, so you're not... It's like, you know, we could really use you to spend the momentum. I'm like four away from like leveling up.
Okay, but what's four away? What is your personal threshold for that? If I spend enough momentum where I'm down to five, if I level up and I'm down to five momentum, I know the risk that if I get knocked down, it's going to be
That's true, too.
Rough.
So it's actually a fun situation where end of the fight, you could spend momentum to definitely hit something, or you could be looking at it or I could pop 30 right now, go Super Saiyan, get new ability, go up a damage tier. And you could be looking at that 45 going, I feel safe at 15. Or you could be looking at 35 going, is this where I plant my goddamn flag? Because if you, and also, here's another situation. You do that, it works out, it's a great moment.
Then you get hit.
The whole thing is, I'm also pretty sure your GM would be like, two momentum. And just throw, going hard and picking those moments. Even if you fall flat on your face, the risk-reward of it always feels story-driven, and the reward, while kind of paltry, really in comparison to death, but death is always hanging over you like a sword of Damocles, you're kind of waiting for the momentum of the situation to tell you when to go.
So do you guys want to test 20 momentum for attributes?
I would like to do that, yes.
All right. That's not a bad choice. Increases your dodge and damage.
I have zero dexterity. I'm a clumsy bitch.
You're a giant alligator. Maybe with the short alligator arms.
No, I just figure the claws make everything weird to deal with.
And the tail.
Bitches love the tail.
Can't somebody help me open my goddamn Snapple again.
Can't deal with buttons. Can't do it.
I just figured like the alligator from Fantasia. Just wear a cape and a hat. Like, that's it.
That's true.
I actually imagine myself as looking like Robin Hood.
Morgan Freeman?
Morgan Freeman from Robin Hood.
Prince of Thieves, yeah.
Yeah, just like...
Azeem?
Yeah.
Achoo. Yeah.
Gazoon tight.
Yeah.
So I was thinking firing into melee. We're talking about the difference between different kinds of cover. I think there's soft cover and hard cover, right? Was that what we decided?
Like books.
Yeah. So, yeah. Soft cover and hard cover. It's a story.
Which actually...
Story. I like that. Yeah,
I really
like
that do. Analog. That is a dumb thing that I love.
So I think soft cover is a -4 to hit the target. So things that provide soft cover is anything that obstructs your view of them that they could conceivably duck behind, which if it's one of your allies...
A table,
one of their allies, if they're... Just something that it's not completely concealing them from your view, but they can kind of duck behind it.
A child.
Yeah. We have a penalty for firing into melee. I think that penalty only applies to medium-sized creatures.
Okay.
So creatures that are humanoid-sized. Creatures your size or smaller. How about that?
Yeah. Penalty. Or smaller?
Yeah. Creatures your size or smaller. If they're in melee. This is not a cover situation. A small creature would get more cover from a larger object. But if, like, let's say a child is carrying a sword and fighting you, they're not getting more. The penalty for firing into melee wouldn't be dramatically larger. They already have a higher dodge because they're harder to hit. I think that's just a -2. Even if a creature doesn't have cover against you, if you're trying to shoot it and it's engaged with melee and it's your size or smaller, it takes two more to hit it. So what's hard cover? I think hard cover has nothing to do with a negative. Nope. I think you literally can't see it.
Yes.
So are we? When you're saying soft cover, hard cover, we're literally talking about partial cover or full cover?
Yeah, you could say that, but I think hard cover, there's a chance you could punch through it.
See, I was thinking the opposite when you were describing it. I thought, because when you're first saying soft cover, hard cover, I'm like soft cover, like a bale of hay, and hard cover, like a mountain. Like that there's one, like, in other words, hard cover you cannot break through, you'd have to go around. Soft cover, it's conceivable you could break through it.
Well, I think hard cover, there's just it has a certain amount of hardness, and to get through it you need to beat a certain amount, whereas sometimes if we're talking about an iron wall, that number is higher than you could ever meet.
So I'm clear, when we're talking about soft cover, hard cover, we're not talking about the amount of which you are hidden, but rather the difficulty of trying to get you.
Both.
It's shorthand for both.
Well, because there's...
So, for instance, if I am behind... Let's say I'm not backlit.
Yeah.
And I'm hiding behind a blanket on a clothesline.
Sure.
That touches the ground.
Yeah.
That's soft cover.
But I wouldn't even know that you're there. So why is that?
No, because you see me peeking out and I'm trying to engage you.
Okay.
No, if I'm hidden, that's not cover. That's right. Just... You don't know I'm there.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Gotcha, yeah.
If you're trying to shoot me... you get a -4 because the premise is you're trying to get me where you think I'm going to be.
Gotcha.
When I expose myself, not in that way.
Ha-ha!
I think a heavy table counts as hard cover, but it has a lower difficulty to punch through. We have a long shot marksman, and they have a punch through mechanic.
Yes.
That can go through hard cover, but it drops in damage when it gets through.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
But... I think we need to rate the kind of cover and just by class, like we could say hard cover light means it drops by the damage for when it punches through drops by 5 tiers, then 10 tiers, then 50 tiers. You know, like that kind of thing. Like,
we're doing it tier, so on roll?
Well, no, because if it still hits them, then they get their extra damage, right? So we can't do it that way.
Yeah, I think it should be overall damage. Down 5, down 10, down 15.
And only if you have an ability that can.
And maybe by like only like 2 or 3 tiers, just to keep it simple. Because either it's going through easy and that's soft cover.
Yeah.
Or it's difficult and it's like thin wood, difficult, yeah, thick wood, or it's impenetrable.
We say light, medium, heavy. So yeah, there's soft cover, hard cover, and of hard cover, there's light, medium, heavy.
Sure. And I do want to put an asterisk by that and do allow for at completely at GM's discretion, only a vague guideline.
Yeah.
If an archer is firing into a wooden table that is providing hard cover that you're punching through and getting through, you're like they could even be like at the seventh arrow. Well, a lot of that table is gone now.
Sure.
Like, you've been punching it through a lot. There's a big chunk of it that has fallen through.
But also to keep in mind, there's a difference between a random table in a random tavern and the table of the Admiral where he would probably put a shield in it or some kind of protective thing on it for this exact purpose.
Or it's just, made of good wood.
Sure. Yeah. The table we are currently sitting at, the heaviest crossbow that a person could buy right now for normal use would not punch through this table.
Right.
It would stick in it. Yes. But it wouldn't punch through. So I want to give that more thought. Just the idea that hardcover is you can't hit them and you have to guess where they are. Like if they're not coming out.
I thought that was soft.
Well, you literally can't even target them if they're not popping out, right? You have to try to punch through. I don't know. You know what? Let's table the punch through mechanics.
All right.
Let's make that GM discretion. Or we'll make it specific to the adventure. We'll say the table's in this room. If you deal this much damage to the table, you can see through it and then hit the person for half damage.
I think the idea of giving them an already existing mechanic just like HP is a good idea. That's good.
Just HP. Because if somebody has an iron portcullis, what could you possibly do with the mechanics of our game, with the characters that you build?
Yeah.
With your normal, like, what, you're going to shoot arrows at it? You're going to throw ice at it? You know, really, it's not going to do anything. You need to find an alternative solution.
But a champion with a two-handed weapon could feasibly, in one blow, make that not cover anymore.
Well, I mean, if I'm thinking portcullis, it drops and, like, you know.
Yeah, oh, no. I'm saying, but the difference would be between that and something that you could just, like, I've turned that into splinters. Yes.
Yes.
Good. Like, that's gone. We're going through.
Yeah, okay. We'll just deal with soft cover for now, and we'll make hard cover a category that is specific to the object.
Mm-hmm.
So if a guy is...
Or we could just leave it as a situation of hard cover, soft cover, impossible. And more importantly, allow punch-through mechanics to exist specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then you could just give it... I mean, if you could leave a lot of it up to the GM, where, for example, hard cover with hardwood tables, you could say... All right, GM, depending on how thick you think these tables are, it's one of these three hit points.
What if it's the punch-through mechanics only work for soft cover, but for each object, it takes a certain amount of HP to turn it into soft cover?
I like that, too.
So hard cover,
sort
you
of
just
like
can't.
Bloodied?
Yeah. And some things are just HP's just impossible. It's infinite HP.
Because if someone's hiding out under like hard cover table that's like real pain in the ass, you keep... throwing enough arrows at it, eventually you're going to turn it into Swiss cheese. So now it's soft cover. That makes sense.
Yeah, if it's a shitty table.
Yeah,
yeah. Or well, because the thing is, let's imagine the barroom fight. Okay, and we've cornered the mercenary and his two buddies in this barroom. They flipped over tables, and we are just fusillade of arrows just throwing them in there, and they're just hiding behind those tables. They could literally hide there all night.
Yeah,
and we go like, and you would. Just be like, we're wasting time. Get in there, flip the tables over. Yeah, I think hard cover, soft cover. Soft cover is -4. You can use punch through mechanics. Soft cover is creatures that are obscuring your view of the target.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, anything that obscures your view of the target. Now, let's say your allies are on the battlefield. You're at range. They are perfectly in line with you, but they're not engaged. Let's say there's two range characters. Let's say the healer is 15 feet in front of you. 15 feet in front of the healer. There's the enemy. I think you got to move off site to shoot him not...
unless you take that perk the line.
The 15-foot increase in your view is big.
It's enormous.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that creatures no longer count as soft cover if you're adjacent to the creature.
Yes.
It doesn't provide cover because you can just go over its shoulder. Yeah. It doesn't obscure your view in that way.
It's also what they're 5-foot by 5-foot hexagons, right?
Yeah.
It's even a situation of... As you're charging, you veer slightly left because you know.
You're not literally moving a whole hex away.
Yeah, you're just going like, oh, I know who's behind me.
We also don't have a charge mechanic.
Well, We'll have to figure that out.
I don't think we do. I don't think it really adds anything to our game. It adds things to D&D because you're very movement limited in ways that are less important in this one. Like, the movement, your exact position in this game is much more important. And charging, like, if you want to be highly mobile, you play a Krex.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say you're a big Citadel guff, and you're old school D&D. You say, I want to charge this guy. It's like, well, all right, go ahead. Like, here's the thing.
I totally want there to be a charge mechanic. I want it to be in a path.
Yeah, champion is the
extreme version of shield bash.
I actually would love not call it charge, but I would love for one to eventually be in the Citadel line of just like, oh, I for the first turn and only for the first turn, I can move 8 squares because I'm getting into the fray. Like, that's my job. I hustle at the beginning and then I plant.
But I think that is you just double moving because it's you as Citadel. You kind of just want to get there. Like, you don't really need to do a big swing. Like, yeah. the big swing portion.
That is true, but I want them to be able to make a swing because not making swings feels bad.
Sure.
That is a thing we do need to be aware of.
But it feels worse if you're champion.
The mechanically oppressive thing of tank. I do think there's...
Couldn't you just double move and make a basic attack?
No.
No. You can't do both.
Unless you're a Tiktani or a Krex.
And spending that extra action on a move will make sense a lot of the time, but man, doing double attacks feels so much better.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's a problem. I think if anybody's going, I think the idea of charging into battle and doing a big swing is a champion.
Yeah, oh no, definitely. Although I do hope eventually, like, if we end up doing the gravitational forcey caster person, I would love for push to be an ability.
Yeah.
We're just like, as you're running, you feel like you have essentially, like, you feel like you're drafting as a car. You're like, oh, just the air in front of me is just pulling me forward. Why?
Yeah.
that would be fun.
So, to summarize, shooting a character that doesn't have cover but is currently engaged in melee, that's your size,
is a bad idea, and don't do it, kids.
-2.
Yeah.
Shooting at an enemy with cover, -4.
Mm-hmm.
So, soft cover. Hard cover, find an alternative solution. You might be able to turn it into soft cover with enough damage. But generally, let's say we are in the language of, like, firearms.
Mm-hmm.
They are so much more powerful than arrows and able to penetrate better than arrows. If we're talking hard cover, we're not talking about drywall.
No.
Like, you can shoot through drywall. Right. So if people are behind hard cover, behind berms, behind steel, you need a completely different weapon to deal with them. So it's not even, or you change positions or use a different tactic.
Or you cause a flood. You just cause a flash flood.
Yeah. Speaking of that.
Which is not impossible.
Spend momentum. Hope it fails.
Drown them.
Starts to rain. You guys ready to get into step 6?
No, but we're doing it anyway.
All right. Give me 6 steps.
Give me six steps,
mister.
Conveniently, that is my movement speed.
That's true. Speed of six. So, big picture first.
Uh-huh.
I think because step 6 is now, you're more than half committed to a path.
Yes.
We can throw out the sense of parity, the sense of templating that gets you here. So step 1 through 5, there's been reasonable parity on what to expect from the paths at each level. Like, if I'm step 4 Citadel or step 4 Death, you know that a big... A sweeping change came to the character to give you more responsibility that changed the individual flavor of your character according to the choices that you had.
Mm-hmm.
Or a big choice came to your character at step 4. I think we don't need to do that. I don't think we need to template. I think now it's each step is going to start specializing.
Filling in its own role.
Yeah, and rounding itself out a little bit.
Well, and this is also a situation where we've hit a step where if you are pure dual pathing, you're in the regular advancement, not going to reach the step. If you go 5 and 5, you'll never reach a step. If you dip into 3 paths, you won't reach a step in the first 10. Which is our block.
Yeah, I think I kind of don't want. Okay, so let's back up on that point a little bit. In other RPGs, well, actually, really only in D20 based systems. Maybe Shadowrun? I don't remember.
I haven't played Shadowrun in this decade, so I don't know.
there's an end to character progression until they release like a mythic path and you go a little bit further where they assume that by level 20 you are a god and it's you are on par with everything mechanically that the world can do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we're going to go that direction. I don't know if we can say that's the end. Like, I don't care if somebody wants to do 7 and 10, you know, like 17 steps.
No. I don't think that's going to be a thing. But I do think designing around that generally your campaign will end around step 10 is a good, nice benchmark for regular games. But I think we've already discussed the idea of already what our plan for extra levels are going to be and how it scales.
Yeah.
Where, like, your 11th step is a core, which is fucking brutal and I love it. Citadel Marksman would be my first. If I was doing, like, if you're like, you get to make an 11th step character at start. This is where we're starting at. You're already doing this. I would go, Citadel Marksman, I want unlimited opportunity attacks as a ranged character. Let's fuck shit up.
Yeah. And I do think that it does get to a point where we're talking about infinite combos.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like that, where that we probably want to get to a part where we would say right before that is probably top end, right? Right before you get there.
Like, I'm not afraid of the concept of having a character that is mechanically on the level of the divine, but I almost feel like you're like, and what is that? And you're like, level 50, fuck you.
Yeah, just level 50.
So how many steps do you take before you get to take a second core?
10.
So 10 cumulative with anything. So if I took 5 in command, 5 champion, now I get a second core.
Which if you started core champion, 5 and 5, you're like, oh, you know what I think I'm going to pick up? Core command. Or you could be like, core scoundrel, I'm taking a hard left turn. We're doing this shit weird.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that we'll stick to that, but that's a fun...
I like the idea of it.
Yeah, that's a fun thing to kind of hang our hat on until we get there. Because we're not there, so we can change our minds completely when we get there.
But also, the concept of the interplay of core mechanics, when that idea was presented, I was like, would that be good? And then I started running through the Rolodex of, like, even just the possibility of two connections, and you're like, oh, that does some real, real dumb stuff, but not in a way that feels broken, in a way that feels like, oh, I do that thing that I did the hardest possible way that it could be done. By the time you've invested this much time into a character, great.
You're achieving legendary status, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, and also because dodge and armor don't scale the same way that it does in other systems, it's not that intimidating. The fact that damage only scales, like, if you're a level 5 wizard, I think in D&D 5 edition, what do you do dealing on a regular attack?
In D&D 5th edition?
Yeah.
It's not, it does.
All of our margins are smaller, so that when you get to ridiculous levels, the thing that is ridiculous about it isn't that you're doing like 270 damage in a combat round. It's, oh no, I get to do a large amount of damage, and I do it more often, and I'm more oppressive.
I kind of want to start with a more radical change to one of the paths.
Okay.
And I think I mentioned this to you off mic, Liam, but...
You most certainly did not.
Okay. I'm thinking about zealotry.
I like this already.
Now, zealotry started with kind of like as just the bridge between physical and magical paths.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
And that's what its step one or core really does.
But I was thinking about a radical change for something like zealotry, because the way you're building your character for zealotry is going to be so unique compared to how anybody else does. Mm-hmm. Like, whether you're pure zealotry or you use it as a bridge between two other paths, it's going to be very specific to you. I was thinking, what if every step of the next 5 for zealotry until we get to step 10, you could take out of order? They grant you one specific style of play, one specific huge character
trick. Yeah.
Huge character trick. Or gimmick that you could take the others as well and get those other gimmicks, but it's so specific to something you want to do that you don't have to progress through the ones you don't to get to it. So I was thinking things like ethereal wings that appear when you want them. And
I do have to say the complication of this is then if all of the remaining steps are now functionally step 6, I like the idea of adding gimmicks
do think that if you get... I think step six enough should be... Any gimmick should function as step six. But I do feel like Zealotry step seven should be the gimmick of step six again and a moderate increase to a thing you already do.
Well, remember that leveling up is already a moderate increase to the things you already do.
Yes.
So you can pick...
But I still want there to be potential utility. I want there to be something where, like, a step seven zealot, there is at least a very minor static step seven zealot feature.
Okay, I guess it's interesting because it completely throws out what I'm saying.
No, I'm saying
what I'm saying,
parallel.
All right, so I never got out my full thought.
Okay, sorry.
The wings would be, you get a full suite of abilities to use with the wings that define a play style that you can elect to use that would go in however you want it. So a few options within that. So for instance, you'd get wings that you could choose to use them as a way to give yourself cover or as a way to fly or as, well, those are pretty big, you know, something like that. So,
and also those are two vastly different choices.
Yes. Maybe there'd be some like boon for people seeing you with wings or, mm-hmm. and, you know, could inspire terror or awe or something like that. Maybe a step where you get extra ethereal arms, so you look like Shiva or Mecha Shiva or something like that.
Doctor Strange.
Or Doctor Strange, yeah, where you could wield multiple weapons or be casting spells at the same time as you're doing other
Ooh,
things.
I do like that. Especially for the flavor of Zealot already.
Yeah.
That is good.
If you decide to cast with hands, too.
Or hands, six no wands. Hands. Six wands.
Like six wands.
General Grievous, where you got like shooting wands.
I don't know what you're talking about, casting staff double wands.
And I was thinking a halo, but like the old school halo where it's behind your head, that kind of thing. And it could function like the Eye of Sauron, where it could help you spot targets, see them through walls. You could shoot beams from it. It could blind people. It could do, you know, just it has a lot of utility. And then something like a spirit that's with you, almost like a stand from JoJo or the avatars from Persona. What are they called in Persona?
Personas.
Or a persona that that basically fights alongside you and it has its own abilities or picks up other abilities that you have that can be used in tandem. And I was thinking the last thing was probably be like a shield, like in Naruto, the Susanoo no Ohh, or some kind of thing that can protect you or others that you can use for a different way, you know, like some kind of armor or spectral whatever. Spectral armor actually would be really cool.
Yeah.
So we can throw all of those out, but the reason why I bring them up is because I don't want to have to get the halo to get to the wings.
Yeah.
If I'm not going to use it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they're so different that I think that...
So would you be able to use the halo and the wings in tandem?
Yeah, if you took both of those steps.
Okay.
So if you wanted two of these things, you don't have to get the other ones to bridge the gap between them. You can just pick that one, then the next one.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my thought. And the idea is that they may not work perfectly together, but that's not the point. It's really how they augment what you want to do, which is you might have picked something else up in another path that you wanted these things to augment. Like if you're an ice caster and wings allow you to move without spending a move action, so you can use your move action to cast a harder ice lance, things like that.
A mobile artillery, like just a mobile artillery unit at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you're flying, you don't have to spend a move action to move. That would be enormous, right? Like that would be...
Or just even a situation where you have wings. You don't have to, like, exist on the ground anymore. Difficult terrain doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You'll never die from falling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always slow fall. Always.
As long as you're conscious.
Yes.
If somebody knocks you out and throws you off a cliff, you're dead. I'm sorry. You hit that ground like anybody else.
Unless you're made of rubber.
Well, but you're glue. So what I was thinking is, if we do something like this...
Yes.
It will set Zealotry apart dramatically from the others.
Very much so.
And you could get all of them. You could do all these things. But you probably wouldn't want to. Like, you probably don't want the shield, the spirit, and the extra arms. Because there will be an economy of actions, choices that they won't mesh well together if you're wanting to just do all the extra stuff all the time. Which I think is okay. I think that's fine.
As long as that's the only path that does that, yes.
Yeah. That's
totally.
I see every other path as having a steady progression, like ramping up. Whereas Zealotry, not so much. It's
making some lateral moves.
Yeah, it's augmenting what you want to do with the rest of your character. The rest of what your character does. So, I don't know. How do we feel about that?
I like that idea because then if while we're doing step six, we're going to have to invent six steps essentially or five steps all at once. I like that idea. I do think we need to table it and that should almost then be the last one we cover all at once in one episode go.
I almost don't want to plan it that way. Only because what'll happen as we kind of percolate on this, we'll go, I have an idea for how that one thing can be a full step.
Okay.
And then you just lay it out and we'll make it.
All right.
Like already, each of these things on their own seems so powerful. I kind of just want to sit on them for a little bit.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So the idea of choosing at step six, say.
Yeah, you wouldn't say, like, I don't think we should number them as one as 6 through 10.
No, no, there is step 6 and then step 7 is step 6 again. Step 8 is step 6 again. Step 9 is choosing, step 6 again.
Choosing from a pool of these abilities.
Yeah, you would say step 6 through 10 are replaced with these options.
Yeah.
Wings with we could call them I think you called them
customizations.
You use the word virtues.
I love the idea that they're virtues.
Yeah, we could say virtues.
In fact, I would love to, rather than name them by the physical attribute, the mechanical thing they do is like, this is the virtue of, you could name that, like, this is the virtue of temperance. This is what this does.
Sure.
And that would be the armor. Like,
I like that.
Just something like that. You could use Benjamin Franklin's version of virtue. There's a lot of different philosophical versions of virtues. We could troll through those, do a little research, have a little fun.
Get down tonight.
Not tonight. I have a date tomorrow. I'm sorry.
Okay. You wanna look and act your best?
No, I just don't want to smell like.
You can't get down two nights in a row. It's got to be tomorrow.
Is that that's the no? Law. But the whole actually, thing is, no, that is illegal.
It is a lunch date, so it's not. I'm not getting down tomorrow night either. Really, potentially.
Okay.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So given that idea, which I think is a big swing, that's a, you know, like that's conceptually, it's complicated.
And if you said, I would like to do that with every path going forward, mm-hmm. I would say, please don't do this to me.
Yeah.
I'm not even saying that would be a terrible idea.
Just don't ask just, that
just,
of you.
Yeah. Just please don't. There's so much the amount of balancing having to do that with all of them and the prospect of having someone go 7 or 8 steps and pick up 2 others. Mm-hmm. From something else, you would make characters, the ability to make broken characters that are too functionally able, or, oh no, I picked an extra thing and this is garbage for the next 4 things I'm doing. God damn it.
Although I do like the idea that once you reach a certain point in any of these steps, it's like, okay, I'm already a well-established whatever. Now I get to choose what kind I am.
Yeah.
Not, even just outside of zealotry. Like if you're, you know, doing champion, you can be the same champion as everyone else, or at a certain point where you start to single yourself out.
It's interesting because champion, I think, already does that. So the moment you pick a weapon that you like, you're playing that character very differently.
Very true.
And I also think because we exist in a fluid multi-class situation, the idea that you would go even straight champion right now doesn't feel as fun. It doesn't even mechanically in the way that you look at it, you're no, I'm gonna like at least one step scoundrel. We're getting some poisons on this shit. We're gonna do this shit. Or I occasionally want to be able to use a bow effectively and do some movement stuff. You know, I'm gonna dip into marksman.
If for my campaign, if I said, okay, here's the one caveat: everybody has to be core champion. You guys wouldn't.
Oh, you
be
could.
Alike.
That would be. Wouldn't. We'd be so different.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you could be an archer.
Yeah.
You could do Radiance and do dumb shit.
Yeah. Champion Radiance was... Oh, actually, that's what Vaughn was.
Yeah.
Vaughn Vandeven. So
and it worked.
It does work.
it worked.
I kind of want to do an all scoundrel party now. Everyone core scoundrel.
Oh my god!
Like,
or at least some scoundrel somewhere in there.
Yeah, in your first division, you have to pick step one or core. Because you could have Tolden, who could also pick an extra one, so they could be really weird.
I loved playing Frixa with, it was a Core Radiant Step 1 Scoundrel.
That was
a blast. That was so much fun. But anyway, back on topic. The first path I have kind of ideas for, like, mm-hmm.
Death?
It's death.
I knew it was going to be death. How did I know it was going to be death?
We already have something. Placeholder for step six, death, because we created the idea that you're creating this undead,
mm-hmm.
these undead monsters. So we have the Reavers at step four, and at step five, you get Raveners, we've decided.
Yes.
Now, Ravener implies hunger,
mm-hmm.
which I think implies tank that refills its own life by dealing damage.
Ooh, I like that.
Doesn't give you the life. You don't get it.
Ooh, sir, I love that.
But it's no armor.
Mm-hmm.
Bag of hit HP. Points, and the damage it deals, it gets back half of it is health. That's probably a good place to start.
Yeah, let's start there, and if it's too good or too bad, we will know.
Okay. Now, the damage it deals, I think it should deal good damage, right?
Solid.
But just single target.
It picks a thing, it mows it down.
I think I want to give it reach.
Like a werewolf in Skyrim?
Kind of. I was
like
thinking...
The idea that you have a set thing of life, it really can only attack one target at a time,
yeah,
and it can refill its life slowly, but only by doing attacks.
Yeah, I was thinking more like, did you see Stranger Things season 3?
Yes.
The big bad in that, when it like will grab somebody and take life, but it has reach, but it's gangly and slow.
Mm-hmm.
So the reach allows it to shut down an area. It can do two opportunity attacks per round.
That sounds
solid. Right? That's good area denial.
Yeah.
It
can be overwhelmed, which I also kind of like thematically.
I do too. Maybe 50% more hit points than you have.
Yeah.
So it's based on your hit points. It.
Ooh, 25. I'm a little sketchy of it having so many more hit points functionally than even pure. Like if you went pure Citadel,
mm-hmm.
I guess the armor difference then is super huge anyway. So actually, 50% is fine.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, and then you're losing out on the death abilities as well, because you gaining all those levels in Citadel isn't really helping it at all.
Oh no, I'm saying the nature of you're a Citadel tank. You have someone in your party go step six death, and they're like, you're obsolete now.
Yeah,
that doesn't feel true, mainly because of the armor, and it would be a situation of the flesh beast would have your back.
Yeah, so I think
you would almost want a situation where like it's taking damage, but there's a point where you want it to stop taking damage because it's not going to be able to refill its health as well.
I
don't want it to be able to be healed by anything other than
killing.
Yeah. I don't want it to be able to be healed by other party members, though. I don't think it's their responsibility.
I think that in 10 minutes, it can regenerate all of its hit points.
Yes,
if it's left alone for 10 minutes.
I like that.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be healed after combat, but that might add in a little downtime, but it's fine.
Well,
10 minutes is forever in combat, and out of combat it's 10 minutes pass. Like,
actually, what if it has an ability where it's an at will,
mm-hmm.
it can sit out a turn to gain a die roll of hit points back, like some kind of random
flat,
amount of hit. Well, like
flat die roll that increases for your level.
Yeah. So like it would be like a tier of die rolls. It can spend an entire round getting that much health back.
Yeah, I like that.
Would that work?
Yeah.
So that way you can have it sit out if you don't want to lose it. If it's about to die, you can have it back out and just do that.
I don't want a Radiance character or a Zealot character to have to be in charge of
your pet,
but refilling what is a meat shield, not an armor shield. Like,
sure,
someone that you put a bubble on that you know is going to ignore 5 to 6 points of damage, or 4 to 6 points of damage, who you can top off really easily. Meat shield tanks are a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, and I think when it is doing that, it is immobile and it loses dexterity to dodge.
Yeah. It's a sit and duck.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say you go Core Citadel, the rest Death, just because you I'm just spitballing. You go Core Citadel, the rest Death, to get this secondary tank.
Ooh,
to be, you're a one man, you're a one man two body tank team.
You're a wall.
Is that broken?
I don't think so.
I think it's pretty good.
Seems like we already have enough limitations placed on it that it's not out of control.
No.
Right.
It's just a bonus. It's not like a new player character.
And it's also a distinct choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also a situation of...
And you're splitting your attention on it because you're trying to keep track of its hit points. You went, let me have it sit out. You're not like, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a Terminator that you just dropped on the battlefield and you can ignore.
Right.
No.
Now we need to get in some numbers, okay?
Yes.
150% HP.
I like it.
Based on yours. Zero armor. Can't wear any.
It's a flesh beast.
Cannot be healed. Heals don't hurt it.
No, you know? I don't like that. I've never liked that mechanic in anything. We're like, no, it's undead. It does healing. It hurts it. I've always felt this bullshit.
It is just its neurological structure is constructed in just a way where it cannot take advantage of healing.
Yeah, the spell hits it and goes, I don't know what that is. I'm sorry.
It's magic.
Yeah, like, it treats it like an object.
This feels like a table, and I don't put nails back into things. I'm sorry. It would be funny if we do eventually make a path that can repair objects, and for some reason is like, I can repair that. I don't know why.
It's a construct. It's a construct made of flesh.
I would like that.
I think the Reavers are too, but they're so much closer to have being the thing you made them from.
That you can heal them, and it's incidental. And also the fact that they're not damaged sponges.
Right.
Part of the reason why I don't want it to be healed is literally just I don't want.
You're better off healing someone else than this thing.
Yeah, I don't want it to always be a damage, a heal sink, essentially, where like, do I do my own damage? Do I do my own thing? Or I can always top this fucking thing off. It is an endless font of throwing heals into it.
Okay, now let's think of it in these terms. How much damage do you want its attack to do? If let's imagine. If you got this thing at character creation, at level zero, how much damage would it deal per hit? I think D8 plus whatever your composure is.
Well, I was going to say D8 is a lot.
That's
high?
I
was going to say D6.
D6 is a good...
For not specific damage.
If you're starting at zero and it's D6 plus your composure, then it's like, depends on how well you built your character.
Does it do two attacks, though? Or one?
One. Here's the thing. The reason why I was going a little higher, I wanted to say D10, but the reason I went down to maybe a little bit less, and the reason that worries me is that I think the threat of damage is part of its ability for denial. You know what I mean? Like it needs to threaten enough damage that somebody would consider not just taking the hit.
Yeah.
On D8,
but
D8's not that much higher than
D6. It's halfway between D10 and D6.
D8 is fine. The thing about D6 that I was sitting on was, because that's what our one-handed sword does.
Yeah.
And I was thinking the way I'm conceiving it is of a, it's a sword and board tank, just without the board and more HP. Like, I'm not thinking of it as an undead risen barbarian.
Right.
You know, with a two-handed weapon.
It doesn't have abilities either.
No.
Like, it's not going to do... It can't do Overwhelming Strike.
No.
You know, it can just do Area Denial. And I think its reach is full. I think it takes... It can still attack you if you're adjacent.
Yes.
It's not like using a weapon.
Yeah.
It's got two limbs, and it can use them, and they've got, like, little suckers on them or whatever. But,
You invent the flavor, by the way. Yeah. I don't want to be in charge of that. If you make your own flesh beast on your own time.
We'll make a description that makes it large. You know what? Should we make it larger? Should we make it take up three spaces?
I like that.
Because that's enough.
I like that.
That makes its area of control bigger.
Yes.
Okay.
Is it soft cover if you hide behind it?
Yes.
Soft cover for anything if you hide behind it. Yeah. Okay. So I like that. It's a three... Because we use hexagons, we can make a... The vertice of three hexagons becomes its
main area. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. Now, I think it has a low dodge.
Yes.
So I think its dodge is based on its stats.
Well,
and its stats reflect
your stats.
So I think
what's the secondary stat for death.
Well, I think its strength is equal to your composure.
I like that.
Right? So it does. So if we were talking about a level 0 one, which is impossible, but just for the sake of balance, it deals a d8 plus your composure. As damage, but it is actually its physical strength in terms of its defenses and how that would play out. Now, what is its... I think its dexterity is probably equal to your intelligence.
Because it's how you can multitask.
Yeah. So it may get up to a plus 4.
Yeah.
You know, so it has a dodge of 14, which isn't bad.
But it's also... You're dumping stuff into intelligence to make that happen.
It has an intelligence of 0. There's no way to increase it. So it's not going to double up on intelligence and dexterity.
What is its reach?
2. But it's not a reach weapon, so it can attack anywhere within there.
Yeah.
So if you imagine... It is
monstrous reach 2, I think is how we should describe it.
And it's only single target natural at the time,
reach.
Right?
Yeah, natural reach. I like that.
If we imagine these 3 spaces as the area of the battlefield it takes up, right?
Sure.
Looks like a dick and balls.
God, actually, that is a huge space.
If it's
that is a giant fucking space, dude.
But it can only attack one target at a time, right?
If we say it only gets one opportunity to attack per round,
that makes it a lot easier to deal with. Because that is so. I didn't realize how much space
that was
drawn out.
Because as soon as you said it takes up 3 hexes, and then it's that, even a reach of 1 is like it's
so
big.
But actually, I like the fact that it just locks down an area. But if it only gets one opportunity attack, I like the idea that it's covering a bunch of space. Ganging up on it is the thing that you'd want to do. So the first attack is risky, and then it's like fucking dogpile this shit.
So let's make it one opportunity attack per round.
Yeah,
and it is still it only targets one target at a time for 2 attacks.
Yeah.
Okay,
I think it's I think it's 8 feet tall.
Deal,
right?
If it takes up that much at the base, I
8 guess.
Feet
tall, 500 pounds.
I like that. I like that for general stats.
Yep. 8 feet tall.
It makes it a bad day, but not the worst day.
Yeah.
So you need that much biomass to make it. Now, here's the thing. How many reavers does it take to make one of these?
How big are reavers?
They're medium-sized, slightly thinner. And think about a medium-sized Krex.
Would it depend on one of your stats, maybe?
No, I think it needs to be a fixed amount so people can build.
So 120?
Yeah. Let's say 140.
I was going to say 140 is actually
really
thin.
How big is the reaver again?
Let's imagine 140 pounds. If it stood up and stretched, 5'5".
Okay. So,
but it's
normal. 5 foot because it's a little crouched and mean.
Long limbs, that kind of thing.
Like 3 of them?
I think three is a good number.
Yeah.
You have to sack 3 reavers. Spaces. Yeah, you have to sack 3 reavers to get it. Or you can just start with that much biomass.
Yeah.
So the reaver takes up 1 hex, and this takes up 3, so 3 reavers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So 2 beefy dudes or 3 reavers?
Well, I don't think you can make 6 reavers at this point. I don't think you can make 6 reavers at step.
No. I'm saying if you need the biomass, 2 beefy guff fuckers who are 250...
Yeah.
Stout assholes, you could build 1 tank out of it, or 3 reavers.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Yeah, okay. Now, here's another thing. You're not taking this thing into a fucking town.
No, God no. God no. You can't put a tarp over it and be like, whatever.
No, it doesn't walk around with it. It's not 3 kids in a trench coat.
It's constantly screaming.
I almost think you could put a shroud over a reaver and be like, whatever, it's fine.
I think it has no mouth except for on its hands.
Yet it must scream.
Yeah.
it's whipping around you.
I almost think it would make a whale sound.
Oh, that's so scary. A giant eye in the center of its stomach. Okay, well, we'll make it vague enough. It's a giant lump. It has features and two limbs. It can make 1 opportunity attack per round.
And then I would like to make 27 possible descriptions of this mound of flesh in a fucking writing jam and shove that in a book somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's think about how much health if you're just you're straight death. All
straight
the way
death. Step 6. What are you sitting at?
You are level 5, you start off with 20 HP, and
you're gaining 4 a level.
So you gain 20, you're at 40 health.
Yeah.
It has 60.
That's fine.
It's fine. It's actually below Citadel, I think. Nope, it's not.
No, it's not.
All right, it has 60 health. What is a good... amount to heal when you tell it to wait. Because I think the damage it deals is fine enough.
Yeah. It's gonna be taking chunks out of it.
Monster that big, you tell it to wait, it's the other people aren't gonna suddenly like ignore, like, oh, it's waiting, let's leave it alone. Dude, now.
But it might be behind you.
I almost think a quarter is a good place to start, but might not even be enough.
Because
what, a quarter of 60 is what, 15?
How about let's say it's, what about 3d10 plus your composure? 3d10 plus its endurance.
Ooh, I like that.
How about that?
I mean, may as well, got to start somewhere.
It heals 3d10 plus its endurance, because maxed out, that's going to be half its health.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
If you're pure death, which is the fastest way to get it.
And if you roll shitty, you're going to be very unhappy about that misturn, but that's fine.
Running in there between the bad guys who are hitting it. No, it's like Master Blaster. He's a baby. He doesn't understand.
Yeah. Now, I think actually two opportunity attacks is good. Here's why. The three reavers that it takes to kill it can deny a bigger area because they can spread out.
That is true. That is true.
They can spread out from that, and they can cover way more ground and have way more opportunities.
And actually would be less inconvenient to ranged characters behind them in a weird way.
What's a good speed for this thing? Middle ground, 5?
5 is fine.
With a reach that big, though, it's like...
5 is fine. Mm. It's still fine.
You know what, though?
If it has
its own move speed, it can just double move. So I think we can probably give it 4 to say that it's slow, but the idea that it's moving while you're doing other stuff.
That reach is so big, too. It's like, you say it moves 4, the reach is going to go crazy across this board. Like, this thing that you drew here just temporarily, moving 4, you're going to go from one wall to the other, like nothing.
That's true. Well, I think because it has...
But I almost think that's its job.
Yeah, it
sure,
is job.
I'm just saying that doesn't seem slow to me. Do you want to seem slow or just...
4 is slow compared to 6.
Yeah, but when you have a reach like that...
No. I agree. I think 4 is a good place to keep it then, because if it gets its own speed and its own attack, it takes its own move action. You can have it double move.
And it's also... Okay. I also think this is a good place to start, and it's definitely a situation where if we play test with someone who does go step 6 death, and then we start using it, and you're like, okay, cool. We have to scale it up or scale it down, because there's a situation where this thing is going to be compared to other tank characters. Mm. And if it makes other tank characters irrelevant, that's not great, but also then those, they can pivot and become something really fun. It's that that's almost not my concern. It's that if this doesn't do its job well enough, the hurdle of deciding to go step 6 death needs to be one that makes sense and feels good.
Yeah, I'm almost thinking, if I'm step 6 death, I'm just standing inside of its reach.
Yeah.
Like... Don't come anywhere near me, or this thing's
gonna... You can stand right fucking in front of it the whole time.
Stand in front of it, and it just watches your back and your sides.
Yeah, you know? I'm not going to use it as a tank for anybody but me.
For the listener, Liam said, you're standing in front of it, and you, and then he gave a double deuce.
Yeah, like, just as double deuce, come like, at me, bro. Like, I'm gonna put a shadow of death in front of me, and I'm just going to burn you the fuck down.
And your party's like, you could put him in combat here and do this. You're like, we're winning, right? It's because nobody wants to come over and fuck with me.
And I am draining everyone down slowly.
So I like that. I think is there any number that we haven't thought of yet regarding it? We've got its HP. We got its strength. We haven't got its endurance. I think it gets a flat endurance amount.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think 4.
Good.
It doesn't have any mechanical thing other than people trying to. I think, you know what? Actually, 5. Let's really beef that boy. Because the endurance will only matter for its endurance defense when people try to push it.
Didn't we say that something else mattered with endurance? I'm pretty sure we did that already.
Like carry capacity and things like that.
No. I think we said mechanically endurance.
Poisons.
I want to be able to roll back the tape. I think you said the amount that it can possibly heal is 3d10 plus its endurance.
Yeah, no,
3d10
yeah.
plus its endurance of 5 is...
Sorry, yeah, I was considering that.
Fine.
I think that's fine.
That's fine.
That's why I was like, maybe up to 5. Because
I didn't know what it was, though, and I freaked out because I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, I think that's okay. We can start there. A flat 5.
Yeah, it's fine.
Is fine, because by the time that you want it...
It'll be 8 base, and then...
By the time you want to increase it... You could have a second one on the field.
Yeah. By the time you want to increase its endurance?
By the time you're like, ooh, I don't know if that's going to be enough against the stuff we're coming up against.
Yeah, you throw another one of those bad boys on.
You just get 2 of them. All right, I dig him. I like him.
It's a horror movie.
Him or her.
Okay, so what is the maximum fuckery you can make? Step five, death?
Step five, you get spirit plague.
Reavers. I want to know how this scales.
Okay. It's a lot of stuff here.
Hold yes.
On. Like, I don't think I can read it in this. The idea is you can make, I think, two reavers. At step five, you can make three. At step six, you can make four.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds fine.
And
because even the idea of having one of these things and a reaver sounds really dope, and I want to do it.
Wait, I think you can only have three reavers or this.
Yeah. No, I'm saying at step seven, you'd be able to, like, top one off.
Yeah, you put another
one out. Fun.
I think it's fine.
Yeah, it's fun.
Okay.
And I'm depending on how the other steps scale, we might not have it scale directly.
Yeah. So I want to add something else to death. I don't think just this guy is enough.
I agree, because it's very defensive.
I have two ideas. I only want to use one.
Okay.
And if you guys come up with a better one, I'll use that. But I was thinking maybe an ability where you can spend your own health to deal AoE damage to enemies.
I enjoy this.
I also think maybe you can completely cut yourself off from healing to increase the damage of any banes that you've got.
I also enjoy that. I don't think those things in tandem are... I think you can do both.
No, I want to do both.
Oh, wait.
But I think it would overload
that,
you.
Yeah, with that thing too, yeah.
Like if those things together would be a fine step on their own, but we're getting the Ravener.
I want to do Ravener, spend health, AoE damage.
Okay. Now, I think the amount of health you spend should be a die roll so that it's risky.
I like that.
I think it should be a lot, and then you deal half that to all enemies who can see you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So you would say, I'm going to do this thing, then roll a die and you have to go with whatever it says? Or you roll the die and see that that's what it's going to cost you and then you decide?
No, I think you decide beforehand.
Yeah, that you're going to do it and that's the risk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I don't think that the amount... So let's say you had 40 HP at this point.
Yeah.
Let's pick something that won't kill you
outright
if it maxes out with your... So let's say maximum, you're probably only going to have a composure of 4 maximum as death. So... Something, what would bring you down to 5 HP? Whatever, what maximum damage would bring you down to 5 HP? 5, so 9 HP. So we're talking 31 HP worth of maximum die damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then plus 4 would bring you down to 5. So it should be risky, but if you haven't taken damage, you're just like, screw everybody. And somebody's got to heal me.
Somebody's got to heal me. I got to gain life another way.
Yeah.
I do almost feel like no matter what we do, next step with their added pet stuff, if it is cut, I almost think even before the other cutoff thing, we need another option for them to steal life.
Well, remember, they've already got life steal.
Yes.
If they're an Eshwin, they can return life. Or they might be step one Radiance, because what we found when we were playtesting at the convention is that somebody always went step one Radiance, step one Death.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a tempting offer that everybody wanted to try.
It's up to you if you don't want a way to heal yourself.
Does the bubble count?
The bubble?
I think the bubble should count.
Temper HP? You mean shielding? I don't think so.
I think it should.
I think it literally comes from your insides. I think you cannot reduce this damage. Because that's the risk, right? That's the fun part about it.
But I almost think the advantage of being able to go Death Radiance or having Death Radiance in your party is you get to... supplement that risk.
I don't know. Well, I think the supplementing risk is the fact that you can heal yourself.
What's the maximum shielding you're getting?
Well, think about it this way. That's already supplementing the risk if you just put a shield on yourself that serves as temporary hit points.
True.
Right?
Like, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, yeah.
What does a max damage of 31? 3d10, right? Like, that's the closest I think we're going to get.
But that's half damage, right?
So, yeah, if you deal 31, you deal 15 to everybody.
Yeah.
If you deal 30 to 15 to all enemies who can see you, that's good.
That's really good.
That's really, actually, is it enough?
I think it's enough.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Boss fight, garbage. But here's the thing about boss fight.
But your average,
that thing is awesome in a boss fight.
The average damage of 3d10 is just over 15, though. So then you're dealing 7 to everybody.
But it's to everybody, though.
Yeah, but it's at this level, at level 5... That's not a lot. I think it bypasses armor, though. It's got
I think that's Death's brand.
But I think at that level, you're going to average around that stronger. From Shadow of Death.
Well, it's also a thing that because of how single target damage can potentially always remove a damage vector that is coming to you, there is a premium on single target damage.
You know what? I think, how about it's not reduced by half?
No. But I don't think it should be full either, because that's ridiculous.
Or if it's instead of 3d10, 2d20?
No.
Well, that tier, I don't think it's
it's also too risky.
Because then the lower
then you
is
could
the lowest,
just kill yeah. your, you could just kill yourself. I don't want a situation where, oh, I max rolled. I did the maximum amount of damage. This feels really good. I am also dead.
Avenge me.
I exploded.
It's like, he just did that without consulting anybody.
And I don't think you roll for this. Like, I think you only roll damage.
Yeah.
You don't have to roll
damage.
No,
you make
it.
Yeah. That's, again, that's another death flavor thing of stuff happens with you. It ignores armor, but you got to put yourself in a situation that is not fun.
I do kind of like it doing full damage. So it's going to average around 15. You take 15.
You take 15. The only thing is, if it's within sight and not a burst, that could make any other AoE attack garbage.
Well, what if we, instead of it being at will, it's a scene?
Solid.
Yeah.
In fact, actually, I like that a lot, because if we mathematically make it that you can't kill yourself in one hit,
yeah,
it could be just an opening move, like a really baller opening move. I like that.
Yeah.
The love you take is equal to the love you make.
Yes. And it doesn't feel like it's out AoEing fire, but like Shadow of Death plus this is also...
Yeah, if it's
real good.
I kind of want to move it up in damage.
If it's a scene ability,
4d8 maxes out at 32.
Ooh,
plus 4,
if it's a scene,
38.
Ooh, I like it.
You get down to 2 HP.
That, well, here's the fun part. One, you're probably not going to always roll.
No,
super heavy,
and you're never going to crit unless you just roll max damage.
Yeah.
because you're not rolling
to hit. But also, I love the idea of you roll max damage and a. I do always love a system that allows you to royally piss off your game master. I do think that needs to be a possibility.
Those were the best games with you.
Oh my god.
When you were pissed off, we were having a blast.
No, but
not because you were pissed, but because of the scenario.
Yeah, no. I loved being pissed off as a DM. It was a little infuriating to see a lot of work be chewed up by a lawnmower.
Sure.
But it's also a thing where, like, after the fact, you look at the lawnmower and go, like, oh, it's so elegantly designed. Yeah. Look at all the... And also, because of how those things happened, because of how those roles happened, because it wasn't a single overpowered character glassing a thing.
It was teamwork.
It was teamwork. Yeah. It was a lot of interplay. It was a little bit of luck, but also you manufactured luck purposefully in such a way of, like... Also, just even the idea of...
good gaming.
It's yeah.
When you play well.
It was threat assessment, damage, luck, like everything moved in concert. And after you get done with it, you were like, that was, while probably not mathematically the best way to deal with this, you've built a team where you're always in that ballpark.
I have one more...
Stipulation?
Two more wrinkles to add to this.
Okay.
If you die... Okay, yes. Well, actually, let's... If you die from it, they don't take the damage.
Okay.
I think you did it to yourself, and because the effect never gets the chance to transfer to them, right?
All right.
They just watch you kill yourself.
Add more to the risk. Like it.
Okay. I think to help it synergize with other death abilities, I think they take the damage at the end of their next turn. It puts a bane on them.
Okay.
Until the end of their next turn. That way... You can spread it to another target that didn't have it.
Yeah.
Zealotry
appears.
It can be removed before it happens.
So in other words, if a target is defeated and it dies before the next turn, it's not wasted.
No, it would be wasted on that target. But it's an AoE thing. So the likelihood that it's not going to pop off on at least a couple of them is very low.
Okay.
All right. I do now want to present this because it's such a big attack. Because you do not have to roll to hit.
Yeah.
Can we figure out a way to involve momentum to be spent on this? Because that is now the only possible complaint about this is that there is no feasible way to
make it a momentum moment.
To make it a momentum moment.
Okay, well, how about we...
So I would like to add this caveat. If it kills you, you should be able to spend a flat amount of sizable momentum to go, I have 1 HP.
I have an alternate thing.
All right.
I think you can roll to hit. I think if we're giving it full damage, you rolled a hit, but it's against endurance.
Right. Is it then maybe you can decide to roll like there isn't like...
I don't think you get to target.
No. I'm just saying like you could say, okay, I'm going to risk rolling to hit. There's a risk and reward there. But if you just say, I just want to do the baseline damage AoE effect, then it's just kind of more even keel.
I don't. That's too complicated. Yeah, that's too much thought.
For that scene.
I do. Here's the thing. If this was a video game and you didn't, if making that decision was instant and it was auto-calculated and you didn't have to do all of the secondary math, yes, totally. The fact that you actually have to roll it out, no.
True.
Please don't.
Well, here's the problem with rolling to hit.
You could miss.
Well, yeah, but also it'd be more fun for the damage that you deal to yourself to be unlinked from the damage they take. You just roll that damage on them at the end of their turn.
Okay.
Right? Because there's things that maximize that increase the damage of Banes that are on a target.
Yes. Oh, okay. Right? Single target. Again, my whole thing is, how do we allow for momentum to interact with this ability?
I think you rolled a hit. Versus their endurance. If they saw you, it goes against their endurance. And it's just like any other cast. It uses your intelligence to hit, and then it deals tier 28 damage to you, plus your composure to you. It puts a bane on all enemies who saw you, who were struck by, like, when they saw you, you roll the
criminal,
attack.
Yes.
When they saw you make the attack, you've spent momentum. The ones that it landed on, at the end of their turn, they have a bane put on them, where at the end of their turn, they take tier 28 plus your composure as damage. Mm-hmm. And you might have a way to augment that as well by the time it gets around that.
So we're saying you roll to hit, but what you're rolling to hit is a single target, but you have AoE, like, for lack of better words in my head, like a splash damage to everything else?
Here's the thing. All enemies who can see me.
Right.
I'm going to do this ability. I have a +3 in intelligence.
Right.
I rolled a 4. I rolled a 7. Does anybody have an endurance defense of 7 or less? Probably not. No. But I'm spending momentum on this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm spending momentum to do it. And then I take...
Roll 2 momentum for me, please.
Okay.
With this as well.
That added 4 to it. So now we're talking 12. No, sorry, 11. Mm-hmm. There are definitely hordes of enemies.
Yes.
That have a base 10.
Endurance, was it?
Yeah, endurance defense. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, base 10 endurance defense. If you're out on a battlefield and there's 50 enemies that can see you, and you do that, now you put yourself a huge risk if they shoot things at you.
I would still say 30 of them would get hit.
And they would die.
However, armored enemies generally would be the ones that would be, oh, that's a weird thing to look at. I don't like that.
Huh, I wonder why he did that. And then all of that damage bypasses armor.
Looks like he killed himself. He's dead now.
Armored enemies, based on our conception of armor, and usually the way that you would construct them, would have higher endurance.
Yes. Oh, if you rolled an 11, is what you said. Yes, agreed.
But that would be very funny to have an armored front, and they'd be like, oh, that was weird. That guy looked like he got hurt. And then they start marching forward, and they're like, is anyone behind us?
The guys in front, they look behind them, and an entire part of the vanguard is gone.
All of the archers are dead.
I think that's what death needs to do.
Yes.
Right? So, okay. I love it. I think that's good enough. What do we call it? Something with sacrifice?
Yeah, I was going to say sacrificial explosion, sacrificial visage.
Let's look for other things other than sacrifice, just because I think there's ways, probably abilities later that we want to use the sacrifice your own.
Dark Reavers. Martyrdom.
Dark martyrdom. I like that.
Falling on one sword or something.
Masochistic explosion. Masochistic vision.
Here's a word I've never seen before.
What?
Hecatomb.
I like this immediately.
Hecatomb.
Hecatomb. A great public sacrifice, originally 100 oxen.
Done. Done. In fact, you do not need to add anything else to that word. That is enough. Hecatomb.
Yeah. Well, something that implies that it spreads, right? So, like...
100 oxen.
I don't, 100
oxen is a big fucking deal.
Here's the thing. I don't think you'd need to. I think Hecatomb is its own... It's the
Middle of battlefield, this is your speed ability. I'm spending through momentum.
Hecatomb! Yeah, no, I think Hecatomb is alone.
And then you whiff, and then everyone
I
goes,
don't think it needs any added flavor.
I was just going to say right. Like
Hecatomb right?
Right of Hecatomb?
Right of Hecatomb would be... Right of the Hecatomb?
Hecatomb's right?
Hecatomb... I think just Hecatomb right.
Yeah.
R-I-T-E? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, done. I love it. That's step six death, everybody.
Boom.
Hecatomb right.
And a big burly boy.
Mm-hmm. We call it seppuku.
No.
Don't do that. We're not going to do that. All right, well, I think that's it for today.
Yeah.
I want to thank Liam and Doug for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to...
It's been our pleasure, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Hopefully, we'll see a little bit more of you.
And if I go on my diet, hopefully a little bit less.
Ooh. No one's ever made that joke.
Also, you're wrong. I like them thick.
Well, then I'll get my hair cut then. You'll see less
Well,
of
I
me.
Like that too.
Well, yeah. We're three juicy boys signing out. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If the game we're making sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/RPGFS. $1 patrons get access to the cutting room floor, where all of the off-topic comedy that was cut out of episodes is curated for your enjoyment. $2 patrons get the updated character sheets that they can use to make their own characters in our system. $5 patrons get access to every rulebook we release as we update them. $10 patrons get to create custom NPCs for use in our actual play podcast, Leyliners. Also, if you enjoy the show, please rate and review us on Podchaser and Apple Podcasts. Every review helps. If you want to reach out to us with your gameplay ideas, please comment on our Patreon or tag us on Twitter. We are at @homebrewhombres. Thank you all again, and until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.